Yes, we're back on the Busbot Scottish Football Podcast, episode number 260, with me, Hamish Carton. In the week when we heard that Scottish Stadia could be half full in as early as August, Robbie Nielsen switched Premiership side Dundee United for Championship Hearts. We found out that Stephen Robinson won't be leaving Motherwell for Northern Ireland. And of course, Liverpool finally won the English Premier League. We're going to touch on all of that over the next hour or so with Callum Scott and Callum Fisher. Callum Scott, first, how are you and what stood out for you this week?
Aye, well, thanks for having me back, Hamish. Delighted to be back in the podcast. Obviously, I missed it in a couple of news we were doing them. They were top class, so I was happy to be on again. And aye, as you said, I mean, we were kind of worrying before about content for the pods in the last few weeks, and then obviously we've been blessed with all this. But I mean, although it's a Scottish football podcast, I mean, the 30 years of hurt for Liverpool, I mean, are definitely stand out. Ken, they've been deprived of success with Ken only winning a couple of Champions Leagues, few FA Cups and that, Super Cups, but the 30 years of hurt, now they've eventually delivered the Premier League title.
We won't touch on that too much with it being the Scottish football podcast, but if you want to quickly touch on it, I'll allow that, Fisher.
It was quite just obviously interesting fashion for them to win it amidst a global pandemic. I'm sure none of the supporters would have wanted that to be the way they won it, but it's good to see, and I know there's kind of a monopoly in terms of the kind of top six teams in England, but it is good to see kind of Liverpool win a title again. Something a wee bit different, as opposed to obviously it's kind of been Man City, Chelsea. Obviously you had Leicester in there as well, but it's been Man City, Chelsea, Arsenal kind of further back, and Man United through the majority of our lifetime. So good to see. They certainly are a big fan of Jurgen Klopp and the football they play, so I was happy to see it. And obviously my team's gaffer is obviously a Liverpool legend, so I thought I'd get that a Rangers reference in there in the first 5 minutes. But yeah, good to see Liverpool win it, and obviously thoroughly deserved.
Yes, very good. It was also the week, on a more serious note, when we heard the news yesterday of the pretty shocking attack in Glasgow. Our thoughts and best wishes go out to everyone currently in hospital, including Constable David White. And also, we wish all the best to Jim Duffy, who suffered a heart attack earlier in the week, but he is, thankfully, said to be recovering. Right, obviously a pretty busy week, as you said, KC, Robbie Nielsen going to Hearts, loads of other stuff we're going to touch on throughout the next hour or so. We'll start with the Robbie Nielsen stuff. We've got Tom McKinnon, obviously, former podcast member, sent in a wee kind of voice memo from a Dundee United fan's point of view. We'll get onto that later on, but if we kind of split it into, you know, touching on, you know, both teams, were you surprised, Casey, when you saw this news come through at first? Because it kind of came out of nowhere. There wasn't really much chat about this happening until it just emerged, I think, on Sunday night.
Well, anybody that try to say they could see this coming is fully nonsense, to be honest, because there's no way, and it did come out of the blue, but the more you kind of look at it, a lot it does kind of make sense. And Robbie Nielsen's own mannerisms, remember, he kind of left Hearts out of the blue as well, you know. I know it's one of those, it's technically he did leave them in second place when he left, but I think teams below them had games in hand in that, so I always said that he left them in second, then went to MK Dons, but they were never ever going to finish second that year, but he did do a good job. So when you see that, he's obviously he's left clubs out of nowhere in the past, and obviously it's clear to see that he is obviously a Hearts man. There's no doubt about that. He's probably sees the fact that, well, it's either one or two things. He's either sees he's got unfinished business at Tynecastle, or he just wants to be the Neil Warnock of the Championship up here and consistently get teams promoted and stay. That's his level. But no, I mean, as I said, a lot makes sense. And again, it's one of those that, I mean, United fans are probably, they're no hurt about Robbie Nielsen leaving per se. It's more the fact that they probably see themselves as kind of on a similar kind of level to Hearts. I would say Hearts are a bigger club, but Dundee United are also a very big club, and particularly under circumstances with them being Championship now and United in the top flight. But it's more the fact that he's left them for that, not the fact that they've actually lost a great manager or anything. It's more probably disappointment and bitterness that they've lost a manager effectively to a club in the league below them now. But I think that with some of the names linked to the job, which I'm sure we'll come on about, I mean, I don't really think that he will be missed. I think he is a good manager, but I think that he's certainly not replaceable, and they really should have won the league last year anyway.
Yeah, I mean, what do we think it means for Dundee United at the moment? Because, you know, their managing director, Mal Branigan, I think left last month, and there was talk that the whole relationship between Nielsen and obviously they've got a sporting director, I think Tony Ashgar is his name, wasn't totally great, and the chat was that apparently, you know, he wasn't always accessible to Nielsen. And obviously it's a club that's just been promoted, and in a normal world, that'd be, you know, a club where there's a real feel-good factor around Tannadice, but there doesn't seem to be that at the moment. And obviously, as I say, your managing director moving on and your manager within the space of a few weeks kind of shows that there's something not quite right there, despite things looking all right on the pitch.
Yeah, I think it's probably just, for Dundee United fans, just disappointing that, again, there's a lack of consistency within the club, because obviously since, well, before they went down really, and the season's leading up to it, you know, they were a bit of a shambles, and this season they've finally managed to get it right by winning the league, which they should have done anyway, and now the manager that's taking them up has gone to Hearts. Completely agree with Casey in terms of, I can understand why he's gone to Hearts. I think it's a very comfortable job for him there, and as you say, Hamish, maybe if things aren't great off the park, he's looking at it going, well, if I go to Hearts, you know, I'm fairly confident that I can win the championship. And then, let's be honest, they won the championship at an absolute skoosh last time, with Rangers and Hibs in it. So he'll be looking at it, looking to go there and do the same again. And if Dundee United, as you say, if things aren't great there, then he's probably maybe hedging his bets, thinking that with Dundee United go up next season, it won't be plain sailing for them, whereas he can get Hearts back at the first time asking. But I also think it presents quite an exciting opportunity for Dundee United, because if you take away the fact, obviously, they've been linked with Tommy Wright, Lee McCulloch, kind of get John Collins, guys like that, there are some fairly interesting names getting thrown about, and there is the opportunity for them to come up with a kind of, you know, with a fresh group of players there, and really make an impact in the league. So I don't necessarily think it's all doom and gloom. I don't think Dundee United are going to come up. I think they will go maybe slightly left field with an appointment, and I think they'll come up, and I think they'll be fairly successful in the top flight, to be honest.
Where do you kind of place Dundee United in, you know, the 12 Premiership teams, Casey? Because I'm struggling a wee bit myself, because obviously we were kind of chatting about this before we came on, but if you look at them in terms of, you know, size of club, for me they're number 6, probably behind the obvious 5 in Scotland. In terms of, you know, the fan base they get, and you look whenever they go to Hampden, the numbers they take there, they've got a big support, but they've obviously gone through such a kind of troublesome period. And even last year, I think they played 28 games in the Championship. They only won 18 of them. So it's not as if, you know, they absolutely, I know they romped the league, but they went up against a great deal in that division. They still lost 5 games and drew 5, and I think they had a wee sticky patch kind of midway through the season. So, you know, you're only winning, what's that, just over half of your games in the second tier. You're probably not expecting to be top 6 next season, but surely they're, I mean, when you see a team like Hamilton, how they're apparently going to struggle next season, I know we say that every season about Hamilton, but surely Dundee United aren't going to be, you know, in a relegation fight, or are they?
I mean, it's one of those, you're absolutely spot on initially, like, history, size of the club and that, there's no doubt Dundee United should be in the top flight. They should be, at worst, be mid-table and safe. And then, realistically, every year they should be competing for top 6 and competing for places in Europe. A kind of good Dundee United side, that's what they'll be. What we think they'll be and what the United fans will think they'll be next year is obviously got to be a conflict there, because, I mean, realistically, it's, although they are a big club, and the likes of both Hearts and Hibs, despite being down there, have come back up and been, well, up until last season there when Hearts went down, were kind of relatively successful, no kind of in any fear of relegation, particularly the first couple of years Hearts were in, they were top 6 teams and getting in Europe. But it's a lot harder than you think. I mean, and it is a big jump, and as you said, I mean, they obviously won the league last year and they were obviously expected to do that, but I mean, it's not like they were ripping it up down there, and it's got to be a totally different ball game in the top flight. And the thing that I would look for, it's definitely an attractive job here, but it's like they kind of make the same mistake that St Mirren did when Jack Ross got them promoted, and then Jack Ross left to take the Sunderland job, and then St Mirren appointed Alan Stubbs and it was a disaster, and then Oran Kearney comes in, who nobody had ever heard of, and then just does enough to keep them up via the playoffs. So for me next year, I think it's all about, regardless of whether they want to hear it or not, they've got to, their first objective is to stay in the league and then take it for the island. I'm not saying that to be, you know, generic and be slate footballers for having no character. That's got to be the objective. Their first priority, especially during what the times that we're in now, they've got to stay in the league and then they build for there. First, and keep going with that. And then realistically, they would like to be hitting themselves. They could get into the top six, right? So for me, that's why the obvious candidate, there's their better names out there as well, but for what they need, I think it's got to be Tommy Wright. There's no doubt about that. He'll never get you relegated, and then it's something to build on and be hard to beat. That's what I think, but because we don't know how the players will compete in the top flight. In a separate issue, there's a lot of pressure on Lawrence Shanklin next year as well. The goals he's scored, unbelievable, but he's been the talk of everybody, I think, and, well, can he do it in the top flight? Can he do it in the top flight? This is now his chance. And it's one of those, man. See if he doesn't score. He scored against Premiership clubs, though. We all know that. But can he do it week in, week out? I personally think he can. I think he's a good striker. But it's got to be one of those where if he doesn't score these first couple of games, the pressure's on him big time. So maybe he'll want to go. Sell and go down south, because if you go down south and fail, you can always come back up. So just in a separate issue, it's got to be a lot of pressure on Lawrence Shanklin as well.
Definitely. Right, let's get the thoughts of Tom McKinnon then, because he sent in the following clip. He's going to talk a little bit about his initial thoughts and the thoughts of the kind of wider Dundee United support base on Nielsen leaving, and then he kind of moves on to who he wants to see come in.
Hello, what a rush it is to finally be back on the podcast after such a long time out. I just want to say a big thank you to Hamish for sorting all the podcasts of late, because they've all been really good. I know I'm a bit biased, but really enjoyed listening to them as a fan rather than a panellist for a change. But I'm not here to speak about Hamish Carton, I'm here to speak about Robbie Nielsen. Going to Hearts last weekend. To say I was shocked at the news was a bit of an understatement. It came absolutely out of nowhere. There wasn't even, normally with these sort of things, you would see the odd rumour saying, but I think, looking at the comments of the United fans, it was a shock to everyone else. You normally get the odd one or two saying, oh, I knew this was going to happen or whatever, but it wasn't just the fact that no one knew what was going to happen. It just seems like such an unlikely move, given the circumstances surrounding Nielsen when he departed the club. I don't think the Hearts fans were particularly enamoured with them, or most of them anyway. So it was a bit of a shock to see him go. Obviously, I didn't want him to go. He just won us the league. And we should be playing in the Premiership next season, providing Hearts don't get their way, as it looks like they probably won't. But while he's gone, I'm not heartbroken. I think there was a large section of the United fans that weren't totally sold on him. He's had some really, really poor results and performances last season against clubs we should be just strolling it against. I know it's a bit arrogant, but and that's not just coming from my Dundee United fan, and Dundee United shouldn't be in the Championship, but you look at the budgets of the respective sides and the players that we had. It wasn't as if we had massive injuries or massive rotation for certain games last season, like East Fife at the start of the season, Alloa. So it wasn't totally sad to see him go, and obviously I would like him to stay, and it would have been nice to have some consistency, because we've not had a whole lot of that in the last half a decade, which is pretty disappointing. But I'm not totally fussed he's gone. Just kind of hopefully the next appointment's nice and exciting. Probably would have been a lot more disappointed if Shanklin goes, which is obviously still a possibility, and probably has been the chance of that happening are a lot greater now that Nielsen's gone. But in terms of importance to last season, I would say Lawrence Shanklin was a lot more important to our title than Nielsen. Not to say that Nielsen didn't deserve praise, but if they can get this next appointment right, then I don't think there'll be too many fans missing Nielsen come next season. As for that next appointment, I don't have a particular standout candidate. Looking at the odds for the next manager, there's no clear favourite at the time of recording, which is Friday afternoon for me here through the powers of podcasting. At the moment it's McCulloch and Tommy Wright are joint favourites 4-1. Not the most exciting. McCulloch's been assistant to Nielsen, as obviously he was at Kelly before, he didn't do too well there, but you look at the players that he signed, it's sort of the nucleus of the squad that has done fairly well in the past, in the last two seasons. Tommy Wright, wouldn't really want him. He's not too exciting. Definitely more exciting than the next on the list, which is Malky Mackay, which would just be an absolute no, I think. His days in professional management should be over after things he's said, and his manager record isn't amazing either, so there's no real reason why he should be considered for this job. As for a few slightly more left field suggestions, one was Ross Tokley. I think there was just money put on him. I really hope that's not the case. He always used to get a bit of a slating at Tannadice when he played it, and he's not really managed at much of a level. I don't think he would be the sort of appointment that would really capture the imaginations either. Obviously, if he came in and was a success, then obviously that would all be forgotten, but that's true of anyone. One name that a lot of people have been suggesting, somewhat surprisingly I'd suggest, is Craig Levine. He's 12 to 1 to get the job. He's actually who my dad wanted when I texted him the news on Sunday night. I wouldn't want him as my first choice. Obviously, he'd be blockbuster. I think you know you're going to have an interesting time of it. And he is held in a really high regard by the United fans after his first spell before going on to Scotland. Obviously, we'll not speak about that or him at Hearts, but he's probably the one of the sort of more traditional candidates that I would veer towards picking. So the likes of maybe Derek Adams, Tommy Wright, Craig Levine, then you've sort of going out a wee bit to maybe your Mark McGee's. So if they had to have someone like that, it would be Craig Levine, but it wouldn't be my first choice. As for who I really would want, some of the names that have been linked to sort of younger coaches would be a bit more interesting. So obviously you've got Duncan Ferguson, Jens Lehmann out of nowhere as well, and even Alan Irvine. Those three are all in pretty good jobs elsewhere at bigger clubs, marginally bigger clubs in West Ham, Everton and Hertha Berlin. So it might be a bit of convincing to get them in. If any of those three could come in, it would be at least exciting, because you're probably not necessarily knowing what you're going to get. Another one who sort of caught my eye is Darren Fletcher. Whether he would want to take a manager job is unknown, because he's been linked with the potential director of football job at Man United in the past. So if that's even potential on the table, you can maybe see why you wouldn't want to come. But I think for any manager coming in, it's a really attractive job. You've got a pretty good squad. You're not likely to lose a lot of players when the sort of transfers start getting back into it. I think, obviously, Shanklin's the one real worry that you would lose. But whatever happens, I think you'd get a good chunk of the budget. And given the rumours of some of Kevin Nesbitt maybe coming, it seems like there's a plan, if he does go, to get him in, which would be an adequate release, a really good replacement even, especially if you could turn a decent profit. So I think if you were a manager looking at this, I think you would be pretty happy to take the job. It's just whether we can attract a big name to sort of keep this, the feel-good factor that's fairly newfound at Tannadice, that hasn't been there for 4 years previous to Nielsen coming in, really. So next appointment is really key, as I suspect every manager appointment is, but hopefully it's someone exciting and not one of the recycled names that we've seen get so many jobs so often in Scottish football.
So Tom there, you know, commenting at the end, obviously he doesn't want to see the same kind of recycled names, but he's almost going against what you've just said there in terms of Tommy Wright. And I'm not just saying this, but I can totally see your point of view in terms of Dundee United should probably be looking for stability next season rather than, because I remember you talked about St Mirren, and I remember their chief executive Tony Fitzpatrick talking about them being a top four club, like when they'd just come up that summer, and I remember seeing those comments and just thinking, you're doing your manager absolutely no favours here. Just, you know, deal with staying up in your first season, you know, bed yourself into the league, and then 2-3 years down the line look to build up. Because you look at the clubs in the top six, a vast majority of them are stable Scottish Premiership clubs. I mean, how long have Motherwell been in the top flight for? You know, teams like Kilmarnock as well that are, you know, obviously just outside the top six. But, you know, it's hard to break into that kind of group of teams. And I hope that Dundee United take it kind of easy next year and don't set the bar too high. But it's difficult with that fan base as well. You know, he touched on a few names there. Obviously he was going through the list of kind of odds on Friday, I think, or Friday afternoon. One guy touched on Malky Mackay. I just wanted to speak about, I mean, I don't want to go into all the off-field stuff with Malky Mackay, but just briefly, do you think that he should be given another opportunity, Fisher, to manage a team?
I mean, I know we don't want to
chuck
get
you right in there, haven't you?
It's difficult to separate the man from his text messages, as it were.
Put it this way, would you want him in charge? I know he's a Celtic man, but do you want him in charge of your club, Rangers?
No. Even if
even if
we take it back to the stage where obviously we had just come up from the Championship or we were still in the Championship, I just don't think he's that good a manager. I think we were all astounded when he got his position at the SFA. By all accounts, I think he's actually probably done better than expected, but you're just asking for trouble, I think, with that one. It's left field in a sense of there's so much baggage with an appointment, and sometimes this is a bit of an extreme example, but you get a lot of baggage if you appoint like Mourinho, but obviously you take the risk because of there's so much success that comes with that. Everybody obviously talks about it takes him 3 years to kind of destroy a club and things like that, but within those years you tend to get success. With Malky Mackay, you just get, as I say, a lot of baggage, a lot of questionable opinions, I think, that's been aired in public, albeit that was a couple of years ago, and I firmly believe in giving people a second chance even after such abhorrent views, but I just don't think he's what Dundee United need just now. Casey's kind of talked me around there. He's told me right opinion, I must admit, because I think too often fans maybe are trying to look too far into the future, whereas managers can sometimes have a glass ceiling. You can have a manager that's the guy for a couple of years to come up, solidify your position in the league, and then at that point you maybe move on from Tommy Knight because he's taking you to a kind of 7th, 8th place consistently, so then you get the guy that can then take you into the top 6. But for me, Malky Mackay, nowhere near what Dundee United need, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to spend the full podcast talking about Dundee United, but we'll just go through the the top odds at the moment. Malky Mackay just above even money at 5-4. Second favourite, Lee McCulloch, obviously former Dundee United player and also at the club. Is that right?
He played with Motherwell before he went down south, and then
he's been coaching there for a good few years though.
Uh-huh. I knew there was some sort of link. Joey Barton, number 3. Is he not still with Fleetwood Town?
Mm-hmm.
Your man Tommy Wright is also, you know, joint third at 6-1. Then down a bit you've got Ross Tokley, Craig Levein, Darren Fletcher, Stephen Glass, who I forgot was even a person, Stephen Presley, who I think pretty much ruled himself out of the job earlier in the week, I think.
Which was quite surprising.
Don't get me started on him. And Stephen Robinson as well, which obviously isn't going to happen. So you're kind of pool there. Obviously, it could be someone left field, but you've got a pool there of probably 6 or 7 people. Casey, a few names, you know, you can touch on any of them if you want. Levein, Fletcher, Barton.
I mean, well, the first thing that will come out of here is somebody that knows, obviously, about the bookie odds with the Kilmarnock job last year. It was like ridiculous, some of the names linked to it. And you just knew it. And then, but it was the easy bet all the time for us. Like, everybody's like, oh, Gary Holt's going to be Gary Holt. And it was never going to be Gary Holt last year. Knew it was going to come out with Alessio, never come onto the bookies list until about a day before he was appointed. Because news got out. And a few folk put on bets. That's how it goes. See if the three of us were to link somebody with a job they know, he's got to go in there. Get what I mean? So obviously to be mindful of that there's probably other stuff going on in the background. However, the Dundee United's position, I think that it's maybe a lot more obvious than what the likes of what we needed last year, because last year we were in a kind of stick or twist position, or get a lot worse than what we are. Do you go for somebody ambitious, even more ambitious than Steve Clarke, or do you go for a safe pair of hands or whatever? Whereas United, now, I think it's got to be safe pair of hands. And I think that they'll be absolutely insane not to approach Tommy Wright. There's other names there that are interesting. Obviously, Darren Fletcher and stuff. Massive name in football. Ultimately, get the players' respect the minute he walks in the door. Obviously, Scottish, he's been like, well, kind of jobs up here as well, but I don't know if I can see that. Duncan Ferguson was linked as well, which I think would be cool. But is he not Ancelotti's first team coach or assistant?
Yeah, pretty much.
Even if he's obviously got an affection with Dundee United and all, but you're got to stay and work under Ancelotti, Ken. Before he even considers being a manager, you know what I mean? You've got to learn.
There's talk he's been lined up as the next Everton manager after Ancelotti,
so there's no way I can see that. But, and obviously, the likes of Levine, and I know that Tom's quite convinced, well, no convinced in Levine, but out of all the kind of the poorly names at Scottish football length, that Levine would maybe be more so the one he'd go for. I don't know. I can't even see Levine taking the job. I know he came out in the media their week there basically saying that, Ken, he would speak to him off the phone. But that's just Levine being Levine. I think he'd be daft to get back involved in the game after the criticism and that he was getting. I think he's just doing that to wind up the media again, to be honest. But then again, I mean, if he's offered the job, he's back in a platform, he's in a higher position in Hearts, and that would be quite ironic given Nielsen left to go to Hearts and then Levine goes there. But nah, I don't know. For me, it's got to be Tommy Wright. Simple as that.
I think Levine's a bit of a busted flush at the moment. I wouldn't be going for him. Barton would be a good laugh, I suppose. That'd be a pretty decent one from our point of view. Anyway, we've spent 20 minutes talking about Dundee United, so we'll touch on Hearts just quickly. Obviously, they've got a manager in place, Robbie Nielsen, brought in from Dundee United. Who do you think's got the better deal here, Fisher, Hearts or Robbie Nielsen?
Put me on the spot quite a bit here. I would probably think that Robbie Nielsen has got the better deal, simply because Hearts should be able to go, regardless of what you think of the club as a whole at the moment, he should be able to go in there and get them straight back up, realistically. He's done it before when the club was in much worse circumstances, to be fair to them. So I think Robbie Nielsen has probably got the better deal. Hearts have done well, though, and I'm surprised that they paid the money to get him. That they did, but they obviously feel that it's quite a comfortable fit, as I mentioned before. I would say it's a good pairing for both of them. It's a good pairing for both of them because I think it's just comfortable and they know what they're doing. It's maybe not ambitious on his part, but you know, if you're a manager and you keep going into clubs and within Scotland and getting success, then obviously that's good for you. I know he didn't do well at MK Dons, but obviously if he goes in and wins the championship for a third time, then you know it speaks for itself as a considerable achievement, regardless of whether you think it's ambitious or not.
It's probably quite a kind of, I don't want to say an easy gig for him, but in many ways, you know, he's got almost a year to get things right, almost like he had at Dundee United. And I know, you know, the expectation, like Dundee United, will be you have to win the league and get us up. But he's almost, like, I would fully expect Hearts to do that next year. I don't think there's a great deal else in that league. I'm not massively impressed by Dundee or McPake when I see them. And I think, you know, there's the other teams like Inverness and Ayr, but they're not really going to challenge Hearts over 36 games. But he's almost got a year to kind of, you know, get to know his players and get things right. And obviously last time he didn't have that chance at Hearts because he had, you know, Rangers and Hibs in the league, and it was like a proper fight for the title. And fair enough, they absolutely romped it. But I think it's good in that way that he's got a year. But I don't know. Is Robbie Nielsen doing this to get back down south again? Or has he this time realised that, you know, he's maybe more cut out to manage up here? Because he failed quite badly at MK Dons. And I know it's, you know, I thought it was a strange choice at the time when he went down there. I thought he could have, you know, found a bigger club than that, coming for a team like Hearts. But I'm interested to see how that goes next year. And Casey, I just wanted to touch finally on the man in the podcast. I put him in my team of the, or I put him on the manager's bench for my team of the year, Daniel Stendel. Poor wee Daniel. He's left Scottish football after making a pretty big impact for a short period of time. Obviously some famous derby wins and victories against Rangers. But like, what do we think about him and his overall kind of legacy at Hearts, or how he'll be remembered?
I think the fans really kind of liked him, but it was almost that kind of the siege mentality thing, because again, foreigners coming up, it's kind of free pop for the media at times. So I think obviously the Hearts fans obviously backed him, and rightly so, and good on them for that. Clear to see that there were improvements with how they played. I mean, you could definitely see the high press and stuff, but it was catching them out some weeks. And and for him to come in for that period, and it was a strange appointment. Again, it's one of those that say they weren't even at a point him this summer, where he's got a full summer to work with his players. Then you're thinking, well, that could be, like, you give him more of a chance. But when you're fighting relegation and you sack a guy, Levine, who can's obviously Scottish football inside out, and then you go and replace him with somebody who's never set foot in Scotland before, you know what I mean? Doesn't know the league as well as somebody like Craig Levein. They made an error on that part. I mean, they should have went for somebody experienced, if you will, a Tommy Wright character, if they could have tried to approach him at the type. I know.
Going to link him with everyone.
I know. No, but you know what I mean. Like, when you really need results, you don't go for an experiment. It really works. It's a shame, and he came across well all the time. He seemed like a good guy, and there's no doubt that he's got abilities as a manager. It's just I think it was just a kind of wrong job at the wrong time for him. And obviously I think he's linked with the St. Pauli job over there now. So I mean, that could be a good fit for him. Obviously, I think that they're in the second tier of German football still, but I could be wrong. Probably joining that listening to the podcast, I'll go nuts at me for that.
No, they are. I think they're kind of lower half of the Zwei Bundesliga.
So the third tier?
No, second tier.
Zwei is two.
Aye, that's what I said. Aye, I said the second tier.
I said bottom half of the second tier. Aye, that's where they are.
Aye, that's what I mean. Aye, so that could be a good fit for him there. So no, see, it's a shame, and obviously it's the way it happened as well. He found that he was still Hearts manager, he thought, when obviously Robbie Nielsen was announced and stuff, which is really isn't the way to go about it for the club that the media like to talk up has been run so well with Ann Budge and stuff like that's coming out that doesn't bode too well. But no, it's a shame. But I think that the majority of the Hearts fans were kind of, they'd like him and he'd be welcome back, you know, as a guest, half time draws and all that stuff. He's not exactly going to get booed on the park if he comes back.
Right, fantastic. We'll move on then to more managerial news. Not a great deal to say about this, but effectively, I think, what's this? We're recording Saturday, kind of lunchtime. I think Friday night it broke that Stephen Robinson wouldn't be joining Northern Ireland to become their new manager. I'd kind of, you know, expected him to go, basically, the minute Motherwell gave him permission to speak to Northern Ireland. I kind of felt, you know, given Robinson's comments, I think he'd said that Northern Ireland was his dream job, and obviously the fact Northern Ireland wanted him, I kind of had that one as a done deal. Maybe your man Tommy Wright will be getting that one as well.
I was hoping you'd got to ask me so that I could just say at the beginning, well, for me, you've got to go for Tommy Wright, but
he's paying your commission.
exactly. I thought genuinely that Tommy Wright was going to be tailor made for that job, but when they approached Stephen Robinson, in the way that, as you said, that Motherwell kind of worded their statement and stuff, I'm thinking, well, he's a goner here. Because they're like, obviously, we've done all we can to keep him in that. But obviously, it's just been announced today that he's set to sign a new contract. And to be fair, Motherwell fans will be happy. And I actually do like Stephen Robinson, but I don't think he's as good as if they makes him out to be either, man. I think he's good, steady manager. And he'll do well. But I think if he was to go, Motherwell, he's not replaceable either, man. I don't think he is.
Well, he was my manager of the season in the pod we did a couple of weeks back. I do think he is a good manager. I think he's improved them, and not obviously just in a league position sense, but in the way they play football, which we discussed in the last pod there. He's got them playing a better brand of football, because his first kind of couple of years there that they were just associated with, you know, big physical team, hard to beat. Obviously, you can remember the Ryan Bowman incident with Cardoso at the League Cup final where he broke his nose and stuff like that. So that's what they were associated with. But this season they played a lot better football. Obviously, the league position speaks for itself in terms of the improvement. I would agree, though. I think the wording of Motherwell's kind of statement indicated that, to me, it was something that Robinson himself wanted, and he was quite keen to go and speak to them. And maybe he was, and maybe just when they held the interview, he just felt it wasn't for him. But I certainly thought he was away. But I think it's great news for Motherwell that he's staying. And I think it's just kind of what we spoke about with Dundee United. It's consistency, and it keeps the momentum from a good season. That they're not going into a European campaign with a new manager, obviously not to have a goal, but KC knows what that can be like. So I think it's good for Motherwell. I think it's really good news for Motherwell. Obviously the players will be delighted, and the club's obviously delighted to keep him. And I wouldn't be surprised actually if we see KC's man Tommy Wright rock up with the Northern Ireland job now. But yeah, great news for Motherwell.
Right, Right, guys, we'll move on to a bit of chat in a minute about the possibility of Scottish Stadia being as much as half full in August. It kind of broke earlier in the week. But just before that, you were, you know, just before the wee music bit there, Fisher, you were talking about, you know, European qualifiers, and obviously UEFA in the last week have kind of released their plans for, well, I say Scottish teams, but every team in qualifying, and basically every round of qualifying in both competitions other than the Champions League playoff will be one-off matches. Mm. So basically it'll be decided by, just like the Scottish Cup, what, you know, how do UEFA do it? They obviously pull it out of the hat, but whoever comes out first will be the home team. So do we think this favours Scottish teams more, the fact that they've almost got a one-off game against maybe a bigger side, or does it give teams like, you know, Rangers and Celtic more problems that they could be drawn away rather than having, you know, a home and away tie?
Well, I think for if we put Rangers and Celtic to one side for a moment, I think it's better because we've often seen teams maybe do well in one game against in their qualifying campaigns, and then obviously the second leg has been their downfall, or vice versa. So I think it's better, the fact that you get one off sort of knockouts favours teams that are maybe less likely to win anyway. You see that in cup competitions all the time, so it's definitely better from that regard. Rangers and Celtic, I mean, from a Rangers point of view, I'm fairly confident we've been very good in European qualification since Gerrard came in, obviously. I think one game will favour us in a sense that it's a less game for us to play, and I think that'll be the case for Celtic as well. Celtic obviously have had their troubles to seek the Champions League qualification for the past couple of years, but from their point of view, you know, four games or whatever to get into the Champions League for them, for Celtic, is a lot better than obviously having to play the two legs. So I think it favours all Scottish teams, I think, just in different ways. But it certainly increases the chances of having more clubs in European competition proper next season, which is obviously what we want, and that's obviously good for the much discussed coefficient as well.
Probably all comes down to the draw, doesn't it? Because, I mean, if you're getting a home, you know, four home draws, then you've got a better chance. But if you're getting four away draws, you've got a lesser chance in the two legs. So it's all kind of down to the draw. What would have happened if you'd have got a one-off game against Corniskey last year?
Right, well, funny you say that, because this was generally going to be my point, right? So I can totally see what Fisher's saying. And realistically, the likes of your Aberdeens and that, because I've seen McInnes talking about it, welcoming that. But I wouldn't trust McInnes in one-off games. Look at the amount of finals he's been to, he's never won, right?
That's a fair point.
So there's that for a start. There's so much more pressure in teams with the one-off games, the so-called bigger teams, right? And I'm not going on about Kelly in Europe again last year, right? But I'll quickly say this, right? In the way around, and this shows how much I know, right? Because obviously you all know the story with Belgrade, right? We all booked up to go to Belgrade. That's the way to Belgrade, right? One of my mates was on the fence about going. I goes, listen, Andy, book Belgrade, because there's absolutely no chance in hell that they will beat us ever two legs. They will not beat Kamala 180 minutes. No chance. Never happening. In a one-off game, they could, because it's totally different. So up there, and they could. But I said, no way they'll beat us ever two legs. However, I was wrong, so this isn't really kind of justifying the point I'm making. But look at the amount of games, daft wee things, like red imps and that, and I'm not saying there's more at stake, Celtic be more prepared, but you're like you could beat 1-0 away from him, like everybody was laughing at Celtic, but I'm like, who cares? Celtic are absolutely going to thrash them at Parkhead anyway, and we moan every year about how we're not really kind of ready to get into Europe because some teams are still playing their seasons. We're rusty. Players have got to be 10 times rustier now after what's just happened, but I suppose that goes for everybody. I don't know. I can see it that it's an easier route, and as you said, it's all dependent on the draw. But I think there's a hell of a lot of pressure in these games, man, because when you look, it's over two legs, you think, right, we've still got a chance, we can take it there. It's definitely got to suit the weir clubs, without a doubt. It's got to suit them, man. Whereas all your Aberdeens, if Aberdeen get a favourable tie against a Finnish team again that should be beaten, they'll be feeling the pressure, man. No, it doesn't matter. I was going to ask about away goals, but obviously that's nonsense if you kind of do the turn leg.
There's a wee bit of talk that away goals are going to be used, but it's been completely
ridiculous.
Casey makes a good point there. I think it just depends on the tie. So for example, if Aberdeen play, as Casey mentioned, like a kind of smaller side at Pittodrie on a one-off game, then they will be feeling the pressure. But if Aberdeen get to the stage whereby they're maybe playing a team like Burnley again, and you saw how close Aberdeen ran them,
cup tie, isn't it?
Yeah, it just depends. I think if Scottish teams can
negotiate the first couple of rounds and get to the later rounds where they're playing bigger teams, then that's when it becomes more favourable. But certainly, take Casey's point there that if, you know, especially if a team like Progress or whatever rocks up at Ibrox again for a one-off tie and it's 60 minutes and it's nothing each, then the pressure is going to be on. So, yeah, it's I suppose it's just kind of, it's either or, it depends on the tie.
I suppose the one positive is that, you know, Scottish teams will have games under their belt before they go into these qualifiers this year. Obviously, with the league scheduled to start at the start of August, and I think these qualifiers aren't until mid-August at the earliest. I think Rangers come in the second Europa League round and the other two teams come in the first. I think Celtic are the first round of Champions League qualifying. Right, we'll move on to the prospect of fans possibly coming back to games, because this is something that kind of broke earlier in the week. It was from the Daily Mail and Stephen McGowan effectively saying that, and he used Celtic as the kind of example of this, but effectively saying that Celtic Park could be as much as half full, 30,000 by, you know, August time, mid-August, late August, something like that. This is kind of mainly to do with, I think, the kind of relaxing of lockdown measures effectively by the Scottish government, and also the possibility, and I think this was news to me when I found it out, but I think it said in the article that the Scottish government are looking to reduce the 2 metre rule to 1 metre on the 2nd of July. I hadn't heard anything about that, but that was in the article, and apparently that could mean that stadia in Scotland could be as much as half full. Now, I've got my own reservations even over that, because people seem to have it in their head, the minute you put it to 1 metre, you could have someone in every second seat, which would obviously be half full, but football stadia aren't kind of one big row of things. You've got folk behind you and in front of you, so I've still even got questions. I kind of feel that if you were to have half the stadium half full, it would always need to be a, you know, a 0.5 of a metre rule. But just in the overall kind of feeling of this, Casey, it's more positive than it was, wasn't it? I mean, I think the last time we sat down and recorded, we were talking about, you know, virtual season tickets and the fact that we might not see fans in football stadia in Scotland all the next season. So it seems like something's changed, and it almost seems now, you know, a given that fans will be back at some point next season, maybe even, you know, in the next few months.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that we obviously, the First Minister's announcement the other day, that, I mean, total positivity now, man. Like people can't believe, I can't believe, and I'm not being that, oh, because we all need to get back to the pubs and that, but the fact that in 3 weeks time that you'll be able to sit indoors in a pub and stuff's massive. And really puts that into perspective, returning grassroots football. I mean, you talk about obviously fans come back, I mean, it's one of those that, of course, with me, like, and obviously, all joking aside about Kelly, oh, how they already do social distancing at Rugby Park, but how small the fans on that part, right? So, to take that out of the equation and try to look at it from a kind of realistic point of view, I don't know whether I even sit that comfortable with it anyway. Don't get me wrong, if you're going to say to me, if Kelly approach me and say, oh, hey, you've got a ticket to the game when we're back, I'll be like, I'll be there 100%. But I don't know how I feel about the fact that you'll all be spread out anyway. And again, I'm not talking about Kilmarnock there, I'm talking about just other clubs. So you'll still have potentially about, let's say, like 25,000-30,000 in Parkhead if this proposal's right. But if they're sitting all separated, it kind of takes out the, you're not got to be going daft if you're sitting yourself. You're not got to be up, because it's total mob mentality, the football. Like, that's exactly what it is. Like, you would never shout at somebody like that, like, if you were standing yourself. It just doesn't happen. Whereas if people run about you and that are all doing the same things, you get outraged and you're up shouting. You're not got to do it when you're standing yourself. So you're thinking, what's the atmosphere got to be like? You're not exactly got to be singing when it's just you and your dad sitting, and then there's no MD to look up. So you're thinking, well, it's got to be that, it's more a spectator thing opposed to actually fans at the football. And another thing was, I don't want that, and this is more just for selfish reasons, because the likes of Kilmarnock and that get slated for their attendances, but I was really looking forward to when everybody was allowed back at the football, because I think you'd see a massive spike in crowds for the first season or so, because it'd been taken away and folk were desperate to be back, and clubs like Kelly would be getting, potentially the crowds were getting against Rangers last game of the season and stuff. You're talking like 8,000-9,000 Kelly fans. And because you look, historically, I think the biggest crowds we've ever had in Scotland, Lewis Kempshire, man, for this though, was post-World War II, because obviously we didn't have it for five, 6 years. And I know, I'm not talking about when Albion Rovers were in cup finals and there was 140,000, I'm talking like in the 50s, get what I mean? And, like, you're getting massive crowds because you'd been deprived of that. And I was convinced that's what it'd be like, whereas with this new proposal, this is just purely for selfish reasons about what I want to see crowds like. But I'm thinking that'll veer away for that, because it'll be a gradual comeback, and then by the time that everybody's allowed back, it's not got to be the same rush to get back to the FIFA. So I don't know, it's just something else to think about, but I'm here just talking.
No, you make a lot of good points here. I think the whole this gradual thing that you were talking about there goes for everything, basically, because I had it in my head in the early days of, you know, when this coronavirus first emerged, that just so naive looking back, but I thought it would just reach a point where pubs all opened again, everyone flocked back to the pubs, no worries about coronavirus at all, and I thought football would be the same, everyone will flock back in greater numbers. But I think the reality now we all realise is that everything is going to be gradual, pubs are going to be gradually, you know, phased reopenings, I call it. The same will be with football, it's not going to open, you know, for everyone, and the stadiums are going to be full. It's going to be maybe it'll even work up in time, maybe it'll be like 10% the first month, 20, then 30, maybe they'll work it up that way as, you know, things like testing improve and as coronavirus cases go down. But I don't want to sound really like complacent with it, because obviously we urge anyone listening to this to stick to all the government guidelines and all that as they are, and coronavirus is still out there. But, and I could have this wrong, but I think that there was something like 10 new cases in Scotland yesterday or something like that. Like, it's not there as much as we think. And I kind of had it in my head that, you know, coronavirus would be everywhere for the next year and we'd just have to really deal with it. But it almost feels like we can almost get on with our lives to some sort of normality. And if obviously for most folk, normality is going to the football on a Saturday. And I just think this is really positive, and I never saw it coming. I really thought that the next season would be with no fans, and it may still be a good part of it, but it's positive, Fisher.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you've seen a general kind of mood swing within the public over the past kind of, well, obviously, just speaking for Scotland anyway. People are certainly starting to feel a lot more positive over the last couple of weeks. The First Minister's updates, obviously, the kind of the numbers have been going down. More importantly, the kind of death rate's been going down, which is good. I think it was no new deaths reported yesterday, I believe.
It was the first kind of midweek day that's been since March.
Aye, it's not been the weekend, because obviously you've got the lag. Yeah, the first I noticed it, kind of August, Rangers put out an update to supporters the other week saying they were hoping to have supporters back. So the clubs are certainly sending out very positive messages. And you just don't think they would be doing that if there wasn't something in it. So for me, I'm absolutely choking to get back to the football. As Casey says, probably for the first couple of months it's not going to be the same, but then nothing's going to be the same for the next few months until, you know, certainly they probably find or have a vaccine for it, in terms of just total normality coming back. So the opportunity to try and get back to the football, and obviously we're sitting here, it's the 27th of June, the fact that some of us might be able to go back and see our teams in 2 months' time is very exciting. I think we just need to kind of take it as it comes though, because this could all change in the next couple of weeks if the number of cases shoots up, touch wood that it doesn't. But people, as you say, still need to be following the advice, because if we follow the advice and we do everything correctly, the sooner we'll get back to stuff like the football and the pub, as Casey mentioned, stuff that we're all absolutely dying for. But yeah, the prospect of seeing football, or actually seeing football being there in the next couple of months is very, very exciting, because I think I've reached my limit of football that I can watch on the telly that I'm not overly fussed about.
Yeah. We all kind of speak to Connor Park, and he's been, you know, going on about this feeling for a month that effectively when normal things open, and you mentioned like pubs reopening and, you know, shopping centres and stuff like that, surely when indoor things like that are reopening, people can sit or stand in a football stadium in Scotland where it's open air, and, you know, where you're effectively outside, certainly in, you know, the lower league stadium, you are outside. Surely, I mean, that's a fair comment, Casey, the fact that, you know, you should be able to go to a game, surely. If sitting in the pub is deemed, you know, okay, then going to the football surely should be as well.
No, absolutely. I mean, that's always been my argument for kind of day one when all this was kind of even floated back, obviously, when everybody was still guesswork. Now we've actually got a kind of route map, you're thinking, well, this could come in at such date. But no, I've always said that. I mean, if you're going to have people in a kind of enclosed space, then why not? Can you not go to the football anyway, as you say, when it's outside? But obviously, I think the main thing is the whole mass gatherings situation. Like, I mean, obviously, like, I don't know, depends how busy your pubs are and that, but I mean, certainly like the kind of pubs in Killy, man, I mean, you're lucky if you're like maybe like 100 kind of people in's like a lot, you know what I mean? You'd consider that probably busy. To an extent, I'm just kind of guesswording there, but that's different for having 3,000-4,000 people in the one area, you know what I mean? Even though it's a massive area, it's still there, but it's outdoors. But no, I do agree, and that's my logic, but I'd have to look into it more to be aware of that. But what we're seeing now, and as Fisher touched on, if clubs are kind of, you know, sending out almost teasers to supporters, there must be something in it, man. Like, otherwise, because they'd be the first to shoot it down. And I know kind of Leanne Dempster's been quite reserved about it. Obviously, we've seen in the kind of Daily Mail article that she was saying with the whole prospect of playing at Murrayfield, they were originally 70-30 in favour, but now she's about 50-50 with it. Mm-hmm. But no, I think though that the clubs seem to be a lot more positive about it, and I think that we will, given Nicola Sturgeon's kind of announcements a couple of days ago, that there's so much more positivity and we're so much further down the line now than we thought we would be kind of about a month ago. A month ago was bleak, really, really bleak, whereas now there is a proverbial light at the end of the tunnel now for us, and I'm convinced that we'll be back in stadiums this year supporting our respective clubs. Aye.
Are we excited for football coming back? Because we're recording this at the end of June, and you know, a month's time we're pretty much there, and we'll be back seeing our teams playing, and it looks like, you know, the top two divisions will start then, the start of August, and the bottom two of the SPFL will then play, I think, a 27-game season, maybe starting in mid-October. So, you know, football's nearly back.
Yeah, as I say, I can't wait. Absolutely choking to see football that I actually properly care about back. I mean, it's great having so much football available kind of all the time on the telly in a sort of World Cup Euros aspect. Obviously, it's not the same because there's something special about an international tournament in the summer, but it's just, I can only watch so much of it before I'm kind of just wanting to, like, I'm just kind of, my attention diverts to something completely different, so I can't wait. As I say, I don't think I'll ever complain about a poor Rangers performance at home at Hamilton ever again after this or something like that. It's that, do you know what I mean? It's just really looking forward to it, and obviously just seeing it on the telly at the moment would be enough, but being able to go back to the games would be amazing at this stage, and as you say, it seemed like such a long way off only like a couple of weeks ago.
Definitely. Right, we'll round off the show just before we do. I wanted to get your thoughts, Casey, on something. News, I think, from earlier this week that three clubs had returned their £50,000 SPFL grant, obviously from James Anderson, and really well done to him as well. £3.1 million in total he's donated to Scottish Football Real Saviour. Kilmarnock, Celtic and Aberdeen hand back their money. Just obviously with you being a Kilmarnock man, Casey, what's the feeling there? Is there then a sign that Kilmarnock are maybe doing a little bit better than was perhaps perceived during this kind of current situation?
Aye, definitely. I mean, that's the first thought is, well, it's not as bad as we think. Clubs like Kilmarnock, obviously, we always kind of worry. You never know what's in the corner. For kind of provincial clubs in Scotland, who are totally reliant on season ticket sales and gate receipts for any kind of income. So fair play obviously shows a lot of things are going well behind the scenes, that we're in a position where we can donate £50,000 to the club's charity in a time where teams are desperate for that money. And this isn't been uber, we deserve all this praise for doing that, which we do, but clubs need that money as well, so clubs shouldn't feel any shame of taking that, you know what I mean? But I just think it's a big relief, and you think, well, we'll be alright, because you kind of do fear the worst for clubs of your kind of stature. But obviously I've donated it to the Killy Community Sports Trust, who are obviously the registered charity of the club, and basically the ethos of them is it's what the club's all about, community initiatives. They're the guys in charge of getting into schools, giving out free tickets, you know, I think it's Paul DiGiacomo and stuff that works with the MX player, who goes into schools, does coaching, do a lot of kind of fitness regimes at Rugby Park for overweight fans, and then like women only classes and stuff. So they do a lot of right things, and it's good to see that. And the people there, the volunteers, have got more, that money will be used for more resources or even payment for them, which they deserve. That's me just spitballing, I don't know that for a fact, but I'd assume that'd be what that money would be invested in, and it just keeps the ethos of the club going, that we are a community club, and that Kilmarnock's a massive part. If there's no Kilmarnock Football Club, the town's, well, people can say that weren't a bit of being a ghost town or whatever they know, but no idea how important the club is to the town and the community. Therefore, the charity are getting out and carrying out that work, and let's say long may it continue.
Excellent, and a nice way to round off as well. Just before we go, just to let you know, we've got a couple of nice wee podcasts lined up for the next wee period. In fact, maybe Fisher, you can tell us about that, our wee Scotland journey into the abyss.
Yeah, so we were kind of just having a couple of ideas back and forth in the group chat, and obviously we should have been in the middle of a European Championship at the moment, which obviously we all hoped Scotland would have been at. So just kind of having a look at maybe specialised shows that we could talk about, and obviously none of us have really seen Scotland at a major championship, so we didn't have any collective memories of that. So what we thought we would do is we'd kind of pick the best qualifying campaign with everything that it means to be a Scotland fan, the ups and the downs, the disappointments, and obviously the highs and stuff like that. And we decided we'd do a run through the kind of Euro 2008 qualifying campaign. So we're just going to go pretty much kind of give all the kind of background of what was happening at the time, both in football and kind of without, what was happening around this kind of Scotland team, our own personal experiences, and we're going to go game by game and just kind of break it down, and just kind of have a wee discussion about that. So that's something that I believe is going to be coming to you in the next couple of weeks, and that we're going to sit down and do. So looking forward to get that out to you.
Yep, that sounds good. Casey, you're obviously wearing the old Scotland kit. Obviously, with it being a podcast, most folk can't really see that. But do you want to just describe what Scotland kit it is?
The kind of Hackett one, the kind of pink, white, and yellow one. But I kind of like it. I got it as a gift a couple of years ago from my pals, actually got me. It was quite a nice gesture, man. But I associate it with a catchy Anya era of Scotland. I would describe that as
1-1 away draw with Ireland.
Aye, absolutely, absolutely. Jesus, all these things are coming back to me now as well. But no, it's cool, and obviously I've kind of been into the old kind of, remember the 1990 away tap, the white one with like the red and purple everywhere.
Aye, like coming out in the middle with the badge in the middle of it.
Aye, exactly. So I got like the Umbro are doing kind of like retro swimming shorts. I know that sounds mad, but they've got ones with that pattern. So there's your image for the podcast, me and my swimming shorts on. But no, I got that, and then like they're quite smart, so I would give Eminem Direct a shout out there. You can get them there, so you can get nice staunch orange ones, and all Fisher that are like the Holland Italia 90 ones as well. So
I'll look them out for my summer holiday next year.
But no, so just whilst on the theme of the Scotland kits, that's quite a cool wee brand they're doing, and a good idea, they kind of shut the patterns on shorts and stuff. So just if anybody's listening that's interested.
Fantastic, lovely way to end the podcast. Thank you very much to the two Callums for joining me. Thank you for joining us and listening. Hope you've enjoyed the show. If you've got any thoughts on the show, you can get us on Facebook. Just search for the Busbot Scottish Football Podcast. We're also on Twitter at Busball Podcast as well. As Fisher says, we should be back. I don't want to put too much pressure on myself with the editing, but some stage next week with the first part of our Scotland 2008 Euro kind of qualifying special. Probably come up with a catchier name for it than that. But thanks very much for listening, and take care.